Okay, the first reading is Leviticus 19, 1 to 2, and 15 to 18.
Sorry,
God.
Jade, is that me?
Okay, go.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. So our today's reading is from Leviticus 19, verses 1 to 2 and 18 to and 15 to 18. That the Lord also said to Moses, give the following instruction to the entire community of Israel. You must be holy because I, the Lord your God, I am holy. 15 to 18. Not twist justice in legal matters by favoring the poor or being partial to the rich and powerful. Always judge people fairly. Do not spread slanderous gossip among your people. Not stand idle by when your neighbor's life is threatened. I am the Lord. Do not nurse hatred in your heart for any of your relatives. Confront people directly, so you will not be held guilty for their sin. Do not seek revenge or be a grudge against a fellow Israelite, but love your neighbor as you love as yourself. I am the Lord. God bless his work.
Today's scripture is from Matthew 22, verse 34 to 40. Speak. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Jews with his reply, they met together to question him again. One of them, an expert, is
Religious law.
religious law. Try to trap him with this question. Teacher, which is the most important
Commandment.
commandment in the law of Moses? Jesus replied, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. A second is equal important. Love your neighbors as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on their two commandments.
No.
Okay, thank you, Anna. Thank you, Joseph. Listen, folks, I have been surrounded by such wonder as people like Joseph, his wife, Sharon, his daughter Anna, who you just heard from, and his other daughter, Faith. What a gift and a joy. And the fact that I am sitting here now in Jean's kitchen, across from Wit and Jean, is such a real gift. And Katrina, who some of you may see on the screen, is one of Jean's colleagues at Columba 1400. And the choir that you heard in the beginning was made up of Katrina, another Columba 1400, Caroline, her husband and daughter, Joseph, who you just heard giving the scripture, Rebecca and Jean, and Matilda from Columba 1400. So it was truly a sky choir that gave us that intro. And what a gift that it is, has been for me to be here with all of them. So I want to share just a little bit about the way that my sabbatical took a bit of a different turn than I had anticipated. You all know that I love to walk. It is one of the ways in which I work out my prayer life. It is one of the ways that I get exercise. It is one of my great joys. So you all know that the major part of my sabbatical was focused on me walking the Camino de Santiago, two different parts of it, about 400 miles or so I plan to walk. On September 26, just 5 weeks from tomorrow ago, I felt a little bit of a twinge on my right knee at about noon. And I was about 5 days in at that time to what I expected would be 35 days of walking on the Camino. I had walked maybe about 60 miles at this time, by this time, well, about 400 or so to 400 total. So I was really just getting going, and I felt this twinge, and it was enough of a twinge that I said, you know, you really should stop and pay attention to this. It didn't worry me too much. It's the kind of thing that you feel if you're wearing a backpack and your shoulders get sore. If you feel a blister coming on, you pay attention to it, and so you take care of it. And so that is exactly what I decided to do, is to take a little bit of a lunch break to take some weight off of my knee, give it a rest. And so I did that. I put a little bit of salve on it. I pulled out my hiking poles to maybe give myself a little bit of support, said, and then push on. By then I had done about 14 kilometers that day, 12 of which had been through an urban setting of Bilbao, Spain, and the suburbs there. But now I was on a trail that had been built so that bikers, walkers, and Camino pilgrims would not interact with other small little villages. And so I was about, at this point that I took the rest, about 8 kilometers away from my goal of a town called Pobena. I'm sure all of this detail is not that interesting to you all, but it's interesting to me. And then, so I started to walk. And I realized as soon as I started to walk that maybe this twinge was a little bit more than a twinge. And so I did what you typically do, is you walk on a little bit more, hoping that the blood will move through your knee and all will be well. So I walked on a bit more, and about 2 kilometers later, I realized that I could not go on, that the pain had become excruciating, that I could barely take a step. And I had my head bowed down as I was taking step after step, trying to figure out how do I do 6 more kilometers, because that's all I could envision what I would do, because there was no place for me to turn around and go back to. With my head bowed, looking down at my feet, I all of a sudden heard a conversation. It was a 2-word conversation. Hola, vaca. Hola, vaca. Hello, cow. And it was a woman standing next to a fence talking to a cow. Had I not heard those 2 words, I would not have seen her. Had I not seen her, I would not have found the person that could lead me back to where I could get some help. So in very broken Spanish, I said to this woman, I said, can you help me? Do you know where I can get a taxi or where I can find a bus? And she spoke no English. She had an exuberance of hand motions, and she pointed back up the trail and indicated that if I went back about 1 kilometer, I would see a little side road. And from that side road, I could find my way to a town where there would be a bus. And so I turned around, walked back up the road, up the trail. And as I got about that 1 kilometer, still not certain where I was going, I turned around and she had stopped her conversation with the cow and had followed me. And she took her hand and pointed to the road that I needed to go on. You all know I cry a lot, so I'll start crying now anyway. So that I needed to go on, and there was a bus stop, and she pointed me to the bus stop, and she made sure that I got on that bus. That took me back to Bilbao, where there would be a hospital. Now, I've thought about that 2-word conversation every day since then. And I've thought about the reality that for most people, many people, they would just see that simply as coincidence. Here was a cow, here was a woman, and here I was, and I heard the words I needed to hear that would get me help, just to get my head up. But I look at the world a bit more mystically, as you know, and for me at that moment, that was not just a coincidence. Because when I think about the life of that cow, why was it on that day when all the other cows were on the other side of the pasture, it was on this side of the pasture? And why was that woman who I discovered, because she got on the same bus that I got on, was not from this town, but had simply rode a bus out to the town to go talk to a cow, why was she doing that? And the only thing that I can realize at that moment is that for me, it wasn't an angel choir breaking through the sky. It wasn't the ground breaking open. It was simply an act of grace of this woman doing the most simple of things, saying hello to a cow. And what that struck me as I thought about that and reflected on that over and over and over, is that the reality in our lives is that we are oftentimes called maybe to big and large things, but most of the time we are called simply to live our lives, to live our lives as simply as we can and to open ourselves up to be a vessel in which God may be able to speak to us. And from that time, I found myself recalibrating in a way to pay it forward, to make sure that in the simple moments of my life, from that moment forward, as I probably tried to do most of my life, but it became more intentional, to be very intentional about allowing myself, and even the simplest of things that I did, to simply be a vessel, a way in which grace could come forward. So when I got off the bus in Bilbao and I hobbled to the hostel, I made sure, despite the pain that I was in, that the person at the desk at the hostel felt grace for me. I made sure the very same thing the next day when I got into an Uber and a taxi to get myself to the hospital, that I tried to present myself as a person with grace. I tried to do the same thing with the doctors, the physicians, the nurses, the attendants, the x-ray technicians at the hospital that were there in the emergency room. I tried to do that the next day at a rental car agency, at a hotel. Every moment from then I realized was a moment, no matter what, no matter small, how matter small or big our moments are, that they are moments in which God may choose to use us, may choose to that moment to pour love into us so that we might have the chance to change a life in the simple way that a two-word conversation, because had that woman not spoken, I would have walked by her. And I have no idea where I would have gone at that point because the pain was so much. And so I'm so grateful for that grace of that moment. And I've tried to be constantly aware of that opportunity since then. And when I think about the words of Leviticus that Joseph read for us, I think about the words of the carpenter that Anna just read for us, and I think about the way in which we are called to love our neighbors and to love, allow our neighbor, our love of our neighbors to be the equivalent of loving our God. And I think, what better way do we do that then to allow ourselves to be vessels that are reflective of, that are holding that very grace in which God has called us into this world? Now, 2 days later, after I had this conversation overheard of a woman talking to a cow, I had another very strange conversation. By then, the doctors had affirmed what I already knew. My time of walking the Camino was over for this year, this time, maybe. Well, it was. That I knew that that was the case, because at that point, all I could do was get around on crutches. But what I discovered was that though I couldn't walk, I could drive. And so I decided that I was going to drive across northern Spain. And the reason I was going to do that was because on the day in which I hurt my knee, Kirsten had gotten on a plane earlier that day and flown across Spain to get onto a 4-day retreat on a sailboat, a yoga and sailing retreat. And so I decided, well, why not get a car and drive across Spain and go meet Kirsten in Vigo, Spain? And so I did. And in that drive, about an hour into the first day, driving there across northern Spain, I had another very strange conversation. And if you think it's a strange conversation to listen to a woman talking to a cow, this was an even stranger one, because this was a conversation that I had with my knee. About an hour and a half into the drive, I had this overwhelming feeling that my knee, my injured knee, was incredibly sad. Sad that it had failed me. Sad that it had given out. Sad that because it could not keep walking, I was not able to do this thing I had been dreaming about for a couple of decades. And I sat there listening, strange, I understand, to my knee's sadness. And I finally said to my knee, and I literally was talking out loud to my knee while I was driving. And I said, you have nothing to be upset about. You have nothing to be sorry about. I said, more than 40 years ago, your partner knee, your my left knee, was injured. And for the next 40 years, after two surgeries and then a third surgery to replace that knee, you have carried the weight every single day. And I said to my knee, and I said, and you are the one that has allowed me to have a very active and very full life, because you have been the strong one that has held us all together. I said, if anyone has to be sorry, it would be me, that I pushed you so very hard. And as it wouldn't surprise you, I was crying while I was talking to my knee. And I'm sure it was a little bit of a strange sight, as cars would whiz by me, that here is this person talking and crying, but there's no one else in the vehicle. And little did they know that my left hand was on the steering wheel and my right knee hand was on my right knee, petting it and saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And here's the thing that happened, is that I, in the midst of this loss, and let's be honest, super disappointed, super sense of loss, something that I had been wanting to do for the longest of time, I was no longer able to do. So it was a great sense of loss, but even more than that sense of loss was a sense of gratitude. Great gratitude for all that had gone before, for all that that knee had given to me. And here's the thing that happened, that as I began to ponder on that loss and ponder in a sense of gratitude, I found myself then beginning to think about all the many other losses that have been part of this last year. And it's been a hard year. I thought about all the memorial services, about all of the funerals that we have had for those that we have loved this last year. I thought about Kazue. I thought about Millie. I thought about Gloria. I thought about Sharon MacArthur. I thought about Sam Cox. I thought about Paul, John Keyes, Bill Petty. I thought about our banyan tree. I thought about my mom, and that sense of loss was profound. How much I would have loved that each of those folks that I just mentioned were still with us. And yet the sense of loss was not as strong as the sense of gratitude. Gratitude for who? Gratitude for the who in my life. Gratitude that Gene is over here working the technology right now, so the things are scritching and scratching. She's taking care of it. So much to be grateful for. And then what really struck me is I then returned back to my knee, because I realized that my life would never be, could not have been as full as it is without all those people who we had lost as a part of my life. And then I returned to my knee and I said, you know, here's the thing. Something amazing and good is going to emerge from this unexpected moment. And that's the truth as well, that when we lose people that have been such a part of our life and that we are so grateful for, there are other things that will begin and will continue to emerge that we sometimes cannot expect. And what began to be, what became very clear on the second day of my drive, when I made it to Vigo and I saw Kirsten get off the ship, get off the boat that she had been sailing on, is that the good was about to emerge right there. Because now Kirsten and I had 2 weeks together. We had 2 weeks together that were not 2 weeks like we were going to have together, when she was going to simply be leapfrogging from town to town to follow me to wherever I was walking. But instead, we now would have time to explore places together, just the two of us, at a very slow pace, because there's just only so far I could go on a pair of crutches. And we had a beautiful and lovely time together, and I am so grateful for that gift that emerged because of the change, the loss that came from my not being able to walk on. And the gifts didn't stop there. As Kirsten and I continued to, through our days, we continued to live in a way that we could be as grateful for all that we had together. And that gratitude begins to be reflected. We stopped in Bilbao and we stayed at a place with friends Ana and Josebo, who became friends. They were our hosts at a place where we were staying, and they became close friends that we will go back to visit time and time again. A few days later, we were in a little town called Rastafaria. That's probably not it, but it's close. Raska, anyway, Kirsten will correct me at some point. And Beatrice and Alejandro hosted us and helped us to have just the most amazing time. And then when I left Spain on October 10th, I was able, because now I had more time, and I was able to come and be with my friends Sally and Peter, who are on our Zoom screen today, joining us from Exeter, from Topsham, where they live, and spend a wonderful week with them. And then I got up here, and I was able to be with Gary the Great, with Genius Jean and Rebecca the Resplendent hosting me here in this amazing house. And then I was able to spend time with Joseph and his family, the friends that I had made at Columba 1400, and with coming up here, all of these blessings that emerged from the fact that my knee had given way. And again, I reflect on the words of the carpenter. I reflect on the words of Leviticus, where we are called to love our neighbor. And I say, how do we do that? Well, what if one of the ways in which we do that is we simply live in gratitude? Gratitude for the gifts that are coming to us in unexpected ways, and gratitude for the gifts that are to come. Brother David Steindl Rass says there are three steps to gratitude. One is not missing the opportunity. Two is appreciating the opportunity. And three is using the opportunity. We are given opportunities every day in some of the most unexpected ways to be grateful and to live out that gratitude in such a way that that gratitude then gets reflected to others. So from that day that I injured my knee, my mantra has been indeed the sermon title, Gratitude and Grace Makes the World a Better Place. And I say that every day. I remind myself of that every day. And I have to tell you that I am fully aware that these experiences that give me gratitude and grace, the experience of being on sabbatical, being in Europe, being in Spain, that those are gifts of privilege. Not most of the world doesn't work for an organization such as Church of the Crossroads that will give their pastor a sabbatical leave and allowed me to do that, spread out over 2 years, combine it with vacation, and yet you have allowed me to do so and to do so creatively and gratefully. Most people do not have the resources that will allow them at this time in their life to be able to spend a month or more in Europe. Those are gifts of privilege, and I am fully aware of that privilege. And I know as I look on the screen, how many of you also enjoy similar kinds of privileges. And here's the reality. If we who have those kinds of privileges do not in fact live gracefully, do not in fact live with gratitude, then we are squandering those very privileges that have been given to us. And so it is incumbent upon myself, it is incumbent upon any of us who feel that sense of privilege to be able to utilize that gift and to be able to share it. And I will share with you as well that I am fully aware that saying a mantra like gratitude and grace makes the world a better place may seem in the midst of the world that we are in right now somewhat trivial and somewhat trite. In the midst of the fact that we have Palestine and Israel locked in conflict, in the midst of the fact that Ukraine in just a few months will be entering into its third year of war, in the midst of the fact that manipulation and weapons seems to be the only ways in which we seem that we can combat things that we disagree with, all of those things, in the midst of all of that, does it not seem just a little bit naive to say gratitude and grace makes the world a better place? And yet I remind myself and remind all of you the context upon which those words were said. When Leviticus called us to love our neighbors, the story, the words of Leviticus were probably written hundreds of years after Moses, but they were intentionally placed into the story of Moses leading the Hebrew people from the oppression of slavery into a time of freedom and wandering for 40 years in a wilderness. And in that wandering, they came upon nation state after nation state who understood that the highest ethic at that time was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That being much better than the ethic of many other places, which was simply, if you hurt my family, I will destroy your family and your village. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth was way better than that. And yet the Hebrew people said, we will do that more. We will go one step further. You shall love your neighbor. In the midst of conflict, that is the place where they landed. And hundreds of years later, under the heel of Roman oppression in the Palestine of 2,000 years ago, Jesus with friends and followers that were those that would have loved to have taken a sword to the neck of the Romans, simply said, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And to do so is the same as loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. He did not come forward with a policy of realpolitik of how we work through all the different political differences in our world. He simply said, when you are told, ask what is the greatest commandment, love your neighbor, love your God. And I know that right now, in this moment, in this time, we need people sitting at negotiating tables that are seasoned diplomats that will be able to work our way through conflicts. And I tell you, I would much prefer to have someone sitting at a negotiating table who's going to look across the table and see a person and see them as their neighbor, even if they disagree. I would much prefer a person who says, I'm going to come to that negotiating table grateful for what will and can emerge. I would much prefer to have a person sitting at that negotiating table who is going to say that even though they disagree with the one that they are across the table from, that they can still offer a modicum of grace to them. Bishop Michael Curry, in the words that I began this worship for, says, to love my brothers and sisters does not mean we have to agree, but maybe agreeing to love is the greatest agreement. And the only one that ultimately matters because it makes a future possible. How then shall we be a people of love? There are many ways, but I would suggest to you, beginning with gratitude and beginning with grace is a good place to be. Amen.